Welcome to Black Hat and DEF CON 2018. To ensure your personal data remains private, there are 7 unwritten rules you may wish to obey. 1. Stay away from all Wi-Fi and turn off your Bluetooth. Hacks are happening. 2. Encrypt all information you must send. Use a VPN. People are watching. 3. Don't put it down. Any device left alone is an invitation not just for theft, but infection. 4. Don't accept gifts. Someone friendly handing you a USB drive may be hoping to own your info. 5. Anything can be hacked. ATMs, room keys, RFID cards, anything. Be vigilant at all times. 6. Try to fit in. If you're just another person wearing jeans and a t-shirt, well, that helps. 7. At DEF CON, don't be a sheep. The Black Hat Wall of Sheep is a list of all those who get hacked. Have fun, good luck, and avoid the elevators if you can.
Welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark the Liberty, and with me as always is...
Some dude named Corey.
This week, we'll jump into some news about facial recognition and machine learning and what it might mean for the future of that industry.
Cameras are everywhere, they're watching you.
Everywhere. And then we will jump into a special on our preview for Black Hat and DEF CON, our favorite security conferences of the year. Let's go ahead and start with the news. And today we have a topic that actually just came out as we're the morning of today, as we're recording it, where the ACLU recently tested Amazon's facial recognition tool. If you're not familiar with it, Amazon has what they call recognition with a K.
I love these technology misspellings. Tumblr recognition. Ugh.
Oh, it's cool. It's hip, right? So Amazon has their recognition tool, which they host up in the AWS cloud. It's relatively cheap to use, and it provides facial recognition or just recognition for images. The way ACLU tested it, though, was actually kind of funny, in my opinion. They went and grabbed 25,000 mugshots from open sources of mugshot databases from arrests. A lot of states put out mugshots just freely on the internet for you to go check. And then they went and pulled headshots of members of Congress. And they tested this tool to go see if there were any false positives or false matches with the mugshots and members of Congress. And they ended up finding 28 members of Congress came back as a match. Now, for their test, they used the default settings, which have an 80% threshold for certainty in order to declare something a match. If you're not a machine learning expert, it's basically an algorithm that comes back with a percentage. At least for most models, it comes back with a percentage on how certain it is that something is a match. And you get to decide which percentage
is confidence ratio.
And you get to decide what is correct for your application. In this case, Amazon actually came back and said that
9 to 5.
Yes. When it comes to facial recognition, you want a 95% confidence ratio. 80% is great for seeing if an image is a banana versus a chair versus a car, though. Either way, though, this sparked off quite a bit of a flurry this morning in terms of hot takes from the news outlets.
Yeah.
And it brings up some decent points that...
Well, I think we got the good old fashioned. I mean, forget the 80%, 90%. I actually, if I was going to be devil's advocate, you know, I would say things like there's still value in facial recognition and narrowing the field of scope. You know, say I'm looking for criminals from cameras all over a city. Yes, there's a chance with 80% confidence matches that I could find people that weren't really that criminal, but the computer would still quickly show me 3 images of 3 maybe different people that might match and make it much quicker for a human to find something.
And I agree. And Amazon obviously agrees as well. They also said that this tool isn't meant to be like, you know, the defining evidence in a case. That you still need a human on the end of it to review the results and say, oh, yes, that is correct, or no, that is way off base.
But one of the more interesting things I saw on this is it's not new. It's had to do with facial recognition for biometrics on phones for a while, is kind of the racial bias. And I think it's a technological issue in that forget these were all false matches, but the percentage of matches that were people, non-Caucasian people, was much higher than the percentage of those people that are actually in Congress.
It's definitely interesting. We've seen facial recognition used correctly in a few cases recently too, especially by law enforcement. A few of the notes I took in April, there was a man in China that was actually identified in a crowd of 60,000 people at a concert correctly using facial recognition.
That's cool. Correctly.
Yeah.
But I do think, I think the people of color issue is kind of an interesting technological issue. And I think it has to do with simply image processing. If you're doing darker scenes or there's less contrast between like a highlight on your chin that helps, you know, an algorithm recognize, you know, something, it just doesn't work as well if you have darker skin people simply because of light. So I think that is kind of a scary thing. And you probably remember the jokes when the first like face ID people came out and a bunch of African-American people would joke and complain that it wouldn't recognize them.
Right.
Yeah.
There are still kinks that they have to work out.
Yeah, it's a very interesting limit in the technology. And I wonder if image-based recognition will ever really be able to solve it, or if they're going to have to go to, you know, Brave New World where we use different types of 3D mapping. I mean, LiDAR using infrared like the Xbox Kinect does, or like our iPhone's new Face ID does to
Even
start
the Kinect
mapping.
Had some problems too.
Yeah, but I will say a 3D map gets a little more accurate, and you can't trick it based on different, you know, it can work in the dark, so to speak.
True.
So imagine a brave new future where costs go down and every normal video camera also has a 3D mapping camera with it, too. That'd be interesting.
As a privacy advocate, that does frighten
me
a little bit.
ACLU will love that, right?
And they actually called for a moratorium on all law enforcement use of facial recognition because of this test they did. Which, if I'm going to have an opinion on it, I think might be a little overboard considering they went with just the default settings and didn't actually tune it like a law enforcement agency might. But they do still bring up some valid concerns about...
To me, I don't see any issue with using the technology in public places where it's okay to have a camera, but the privacy issue should be how often should we be on camera? If we're in a public place or in a place we don't own, maybe it is okay, but we shouldn't have cameras every single place we go. I mean, there is a point to, you know, don't have them in our house, and should we have every square inch of every sidewalk covered? That could be... I don't know, a slippery slope.
I mean, sooner or later, you end up in 1984 land with your wall screen TV that you have to stand in front of every day.
Exactly. Check me in, government. Here I am.
Hopefully it doesn't come to that. I don't think it will. But
when it does, you know, there are, I mean, these are natural ways that we're finding machine learning and facial recognition isn't working, lighting issues, skin color differences. But what about adversarial machine learning? There's technologies now. So say we are in this brave new world where the government can track us. A special pair of sunglasses with a special image on them might actually be the way criminals can easily sneak past all this surveillance. There's a really cool example. I think Google Research was the one that did it. You know, they're doing a lot of research in machine learning, and they use big data to train how to identify a particular face. Yeah, it's true though. I mean, if you can feed a computer 10 bazillion images of a banana, eventually you can get it so it can recognize a banana with 92% confidence, which is what this facial recognition is. But these researchers then used machine learning, another machine learning algorithm, to try to figure out, you know, how this machine learning algorithm worked on, what features it had come up with to identify a banana, which, by the way, when you actually look at what these computers are using to figure out what it is, it's not the same type of markers that a human might consider when we're figuring out a dog from a cat or a banana. But anyways, they used machine learning to figure out what it would look for, and then they could create a special image that just looked like this weird abstract pattern. It looked like a piece of art that would fool a machine learning algorithm, and they turned it into this sticker. So basically, they had this great algorithm figuring out what a banana was, but you could put this sticker anywhere in the same view as the banana in any lighting situation, and suddenly it would decide, oh, that's a toaster. not a banana. So pretty cool thing. The funny thing too, by the way, was as they were, you know, doing live video of the banana, and you could see kind of the confidence rating that we're talking about of how confident it is a banana, probably within the low 90 percentage. You put this sticker there, it's even more confident that it's a toaster. It had a higher confidence rating for the toaster just because this was a perfectly designed sticker to confuse this particular machine learning algorithm.
So do you think the whole machine learning industry can be improved?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one, technically, the more data you throw at it, the more you train it what is right and wrong, the better it slowly gets. But the second thing is the whole reason Google is doing this adversarial machine learning, you know, process is they can make their real algorithm more robust. Once they figure out what the adversarial machine learning algorithm starts to look for, they can kind of adjust and change factors. So it's harder to fool it.
Good.
So I think the idea of actually, you know, pitting machine learning against machine learning is actually helping.
Yeah. And it's actually, it seems pretty fun too. It's like robots fighting, but yeah, maybe a little more boring.
I need to come up with a sticker that makes me like Elon Musk.
Rich?
Yes, exactly.
It is nearing the end of July, and you know what that means? Black Hat and DEF CON are just around the corner.
Woo!
If you're a security professional or a hacker or whatever you want to call yourself, Black Hat and DEF CON are potentially your favorite times of the year. Get to go visit the super sunny Las Vegas in the middle of summer.
Yeah, not hot. At least you can stay in an air-conditioned casino.
Correct, yes.
Better in the Alexis Park days when you're literally outside in a cheap motel.
That sounds fantastic.
You missed those days.
I did miss
those
days.
Oh yeah, I'm the old man. Back in my DEF CON days.
Back when Corey went to DEF CON 1 26 years ago.
Strip.
These days, though, Black Hat and DEF CON, they take place on the Strip. Black Hat at the Mandalay Bay, DEF CON this year at Caesars. DEF CON does appear to have moved around quite a bit in the past few years as they're rapidly growing, but...
When you invite a lot of real hackers that put skimmers on ATMs, you tend to have trouble finding hotels sometimes.
So if you've never heard of Black Hat or DEF CON, I guess we can start with a bit of a description. There are two hacker conferences, security conferences.
Big security conferences.
DEF CON being one for, I like to say, the guys in suits. Or Black Hat being the one for the guys in suits, DEF CON being the one for the guys in t-shirts.
Strangely, though, old guy history, they're both from the same person. They both started as brainchilds from Jeff Moss, in all otherwise
tangent.
Known as Dark Tangent, and in his posse of friends. Black Hat was always meant to be like the defender, kind of the business-oriented one, which I think is why you call it suits. And by the way, even though Black Hat seems to be a more popular name, non-security people like, oh, I've heard of Black Hat before, they tend to think of it as the super hackery conference. It actually is not. It's very similar to most security industry conferences. And since about 10 years ago, I think UBC or UBM, some conference company has actually purchased Black Hat. So it's not technically Jeff Moss's conference anymore.
He does still show up and speak.
Oh, absolutely. He can keynotes. But he still does lead kind of DEF CON. And that is the one, like if you are watching NCIS and you're thinking of the conference with all the strange people with spiked hair and crazy clothes wearing gadgets all over themselves, if that's your hacker conference, you're thinking more about DEF CON. I will say, you know, TV shows do clicheize the idea of what a hacker looks like. You see plenty of gray beards and plenty of normal people in jeans and shirts.
But they're the ones you got to watch out for.
Yeah, they're usually probably the real hackers. but nonetheless, it's much more laid back. There's drinking involved during the day. It's over the weekend. And it's, I don't know if you agree, to me, it's the fun conference and also the real pay dirt conference. Like,
yeah,
even though they share some speakers, a lot of times, you know, the speakers will go to the Black Hat industry conference and professionally share their threat intelligence without sharing any exploit code. And then they go to DEF CON and they have to take shots before they talk. There's a little more cursing and you might get proof of concept exploits at the end of the talk.
Generally, you know DEF CON is going to be a good conference if they have to rip out pages from the book they hand out beforehand of talks that might go a little too far.
Although that's happened in Black Hat as well. I think Cisco, a big speech where a security researcher was about to show a Cisco iOS vulnerability. The poor Black Hat guys had to stay up all night and rip crap out. And he lost his job because of it, because he decided to speak about it anyways.
That's good for him.
Yeah. So yeah, both are great. By the way, despite the fact that Black Hat is kind of more industry related, I still, okay, I hope I don't get shot by the RSA folks, but as far as security conferences go, to me, Black Hat and DEF CON are more real research, real true content conferences. There's others like ShmooCon or Triple C.
You're speaking to RSA presenter Mark the Liberty here.
I'm sorry, that's true. I was RSA presenter back in the day on botnets myself, but hopefully you'll be speaking at Black Hat soon too. But I find RSA very much industry focused. It's a lot of vendors, which isn't bad. WatchGuard's a vendor too. But meanwhile, the researchers, and I think really the true community of people that nerd out about security, you're going to find them more at DEF CON and Black Hat, in my opinion.
It's as the individual that likes knowing how things work and how vulnerabilities work and know about the new ones right away, DEF CON and Black Hat are definitely my more favorite conferences than RSA.
Absolutely.
So this year, I think you've probably had a chance to look at the schedule too. And there's a few talks that I saw that actually look really interesting at Black Hat this year. You know me, I'm a blockchain security guy. My talk at RSA was actually on security of Ethereum blockchain and smart contracts. And as with RSA, blockchain security seems to be a fairly major theme at Black Hat here this year as well. One of the ones I saw that looked really interesting, it was titled Blockchain Autopsies. So if you're not familiar with Ethereum smart contracts, you have the ability to call a self-destruct command on them that basically nukes all of the code and sends any money left in the contract to another wallet address. And it makes it hard to do forensic analysis on those now nuked contracts if you wanted to go see who might have been using them previously. And the speakers in this particular talk are claiming to have found a way to reverse engineer contract bytecode. And then they've created a tool that can revive dead contracts so you can analyze them and see, look for any malicious activity or see who killed it. Seems interesting if you're in the blockchain world like me.
Definitely. And I there's a huge mix of stuff I'm interested in at Black Hat. There's, as you might guess, a lot of the buzzwords in security are topics at Black Hat simply because they're the ones that the speaker panel is probably interested in. So we just got done talking about machine learning in relation to facial ID, but there's a number of things that are going over adversarial machine learning, talking about how to basically trick AI and ML. So that'd be interesting. The car hackers are back, which is kind of surprising. Charlie Miller, Chris Vlasek, I believe is the right pronunciation for those who don't know. What blew me away about this was I was just at, I don't remember if it was Black Hat or DEF CON because they talk at both. I think it was Black Hat a few years ago where they said, and this is it. We wipe our hands of car hacking talks. We leave it to you, community. We're not going to do car hacking anymore. We're bored of it. And apparently they have a new car hacking.
Then they went on to go fund a consulting company.
I guess they're not getting as much attention from other things. So it's back to
clearly good at what they do.
Oh, absolutely. So that's true.
Might as well keep doing it. I saw that. That looks interesting. There was also one about the legalities around IoT, where it's actually one of the consoles for the Chrysler case.
And that's on my list specifically because we have a prediction kind of around this too.
We do. We every year at WatchGuard Threat Lab, we put out our security predictions of security things we think will happen in this upcoming year. And one of ours for this year was IoT fueled regulations, where IoT security vulnerabilities, or there's going to be a major attack or a major flaw that triggers countries or nations to come up with regulations to force manufacturers or people that deploy them to deploy
either
them in a
secure
manner,
or maybe even give them benefits if they can prove certain levels of security.
Yeah, and in this talk, it's actually one of the lead counsels from the ongoing litigation over Chris and Charlie's research into the Chrysler and GPACs. where he's going to discuss the liabilities around IoT in a legal manner. So it's,
it should be interesting.
Seems interesting. Anything else?
There's another speaker I've seen a lot, Billy Rios, who does a lot of hardware hacking, but he's focused on, I think he's done ATMs once, but he's done medical devices a number of times, and he's going to have a talk on implanted medical devices. So that's definitely interesting. I mean, it's endless. There's a ton of talks. Do you remember the siren hack? I think it's somewhere in Texas where some guy got a emergency siren that's usually for tornadoes or whatever to play for hours. And it turned out to be Siren Jack is the name they gave this particular hack. So
that's evil.
He'll be talking about, yeah, can you, I mean, those tornado warnings are not quiet.
No.
So hours of that would drive anyone crazy. And even things like, I mean, you and I use virtualization and use, you know, new things like Docker containers and stuff like that. So there's someone looking at the security of Docker containers. So it really is endless subjects. I mean, you and I tend to go to talks literally every hour, and there's always something new to learn.
Yeah. And DEF CON should be the same, too. I know in the past there have been quite a few really interesting talks at DEF CON specifically. I think it was last year there was one, I cannot remember his name, where this one security researcher went up and showed off basically a decade and a half of vulnerabilities he found in MMO video games and ways to hack different MMOs to, say, destroy everyone's housing in the game or steal everyone's money or find ways to make him infinitely powerful. And he actually had to skip over one section in his talk because it was a zero day in a game that he did not have permission to talk about yet. And the DEF CON folks actually forced him to skip over it. But he did skip over it very, very slowly. So if you slow down the video,
take a picture of the slide pretty quickly, you get the gist.
Yes. It was one of those, oh, you should.
By the way, that totally gives you the difference between Black Hat and DEF CON.
Yes.
They're a little more open.
What's one of your favorite talks from years past?
Oh, gosh.
Now let's throw you on the spot.
There's a guy that made a, you know, obviously besides just pure cyber security, there's also things like code cracking, whether it be picking locks and stuff. And one guy using 3D printing created a robot that basically helped you brute force a safe, a normal keypad.
Ooh.
So, you know, it basically could enter codes much faster than a human being. And it was a custom made robot, which I thought was pretty cool. And basically they started it, you know, for, you know, a 4-digit, you know, key combination. There's not that many different possibilities, but it's definitely more than a human could do in a few days. And this robot, he started it during the beginning of the talk, and I think something like 35 minutes in, the safe was open.
So it was
pretty
kind
of fun. I just combined my hobby of 3D printing with information and security, physical security in this case.
You mentioned lockpicking. One of my favorite things about DEF CON specifically is they have these things called villages.
Yep.
Where they are for a specific subject, like lockpicking village or the tamper evident village or the packet sniffing village, where you can learn hands-on how some of these hacking activities actually work. Like the tamper evident one, you're given boxes and packing tape, and you can learn how to open a box without anyone knowing that the box has been opened.
Yep.
It's actually really fascinating, and I've learned a lot about up in the Wi-Fi hacking village, quite a bit about Wi-Fi hacking specifically.
Oh, I love
from
them.
There.
And like, for instance, last year, speaking of car hacking, they had a car hacking village.
Yeah.
So they do it all the time. Maybe some people don't believe in this, but I think it's cool. I mean, some of these villages are like kids hacking. So they've invited kids many times to learn about things like lockpicking, which I think is personally great because we need a new generation of information security experts. Speaking of villages, the one other thing is related to something we'll be doing at Black Hat and DEF CON. One thing you see a lot in the villages is folks with soldering irons. And one of the big cool things of DEF CON is they didn't do it last year, but years before, they've been known for their badge challenges. You know, at
right.
DEF CON, you typically get pretty cool badges. And there's different ones for like the attendees, for the humans.
The goons.
There's goons who, that's the code word for the security, the people that work for DEF CON, but they maintain the peace. There's media, there's speaker, and
the
then
Uber
there's
badge.
Even the black Uber badge that only few people get, and you get that by actually winning the badge challenge.
Or other challenges in past years too now.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, these badges are actually digital devices and they come in kits. And so you literally have to solder it together to start doing it. So there's a lot of folks in the village area usually working on their badge or some other project.
That is another cool thing about DEF CON is that there are a lot of contests and things you can do while you're there to both increase and show off your skills.
I would say they're even better. I mean, that hands-on stuff, we love the briefings. We learn a lot, but you learn so much more by sitting down and actually doing something.
Exactly.
So I think a lot of people don't even go to briefings. They spend all day in one of these villages or participating in some of the contests.
And we actually put on a little challenge last year, too. A Capture the Flag challenge, as it's called, where they come in many different flavors and forms. They could be you literally sit with a team on a computer and try and hack a server to find code words during points. Or they can act as hacker scavenger hunts, where you have to crack codes or solve steganography problems and get code words to earn points there as well. And we had one last year. We had several hundred people do it. It was actually pretty successful and fun.
And by the way, it involved a digital badge. Our first one was a little one that looked, it was pretty basic rectangle that looked like a firebox, but pretty cool badge.
Yeah. And this year we're back.
And we've upped the game.
Better than ever. this year's challenge, it's still at crimsonthorn.net, as it's called, after our somewhat fictitious hacker collective that you're trying to join.
Which, by the way, you can go to right now and start some of the early challenges.
Yep. And we'll be loading up even more challenges at the start of Black Hat and then some more even more difficult ones at the start of DEF CON as well. And there are prizes, too, for people that get the highest point totals, I think, right before the end of Black Hat, right before the end of DEF CON.
And by the way, it involves a badge this time. It's way cooler. We have an intern here who's the son of one of our product managers, the VP of product management. That's Zane, who did a lot of work on the last year's badge, but we wanted to up the game this time. So has a pretty decent powered Raspberry Pi, has a nice color screen on it. We added some colored light LEDs, so there's some bling capabilities. So it really is a core part of some of the puzzles. You'll be using it to hopefully win the contest, but it's actually a hackable kit. We've left it purposely open, so you have a cool little thing to play with when you go home as well.
Yeah, definitely check it out. And again, you can find us on Twitter for it too if you want to get in touch and figure out where we're going to be hiding throughout the conference. And then we even have a Discord channel if you need help with some of the challenges, and we're starting to get a bit of a following there too. It's fun. It's been fun making it.
Zorro.
Oh, man. It's been fun making it, so hopefully everyone has fun playing in it, too.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So, anything else you want to add for the Black Hat?
No, come join us, man. If you are coming to the conference, definitely come join us. I guess the only thing I will add, if there's people out there that have never been that are considering going, the tip I always give everyone is go to DEF CON. Like, if you're in the industry, Black Hat, just to even attend the briefings, Black Hat split up into training where you can actually get 2 to 4 day pretty in-depth training on specific topics, but that's anywhere from $2,500 to $4,000. But even if you're just going to the briefings, which are the 2 days of talks, that's around $2,000, if I remember right. So Black Hat is a pretty big expense. It's worth it for the learning, but if you're not kind of sponsored by the company you work for, it can be a challenge for some people. DEF CON, on the other hand, I think it's
$280 the door.
Yeah. You literally buy your tickets cash unless you got them with your Black Hat badge. It's inexpensive. It's, you know, only 3 days. You can stay in a crappy hotel and just walk to Paris or wherever it is. Caesar's this time. So it's definitely, I think it's the cost effective way to do it, because half of the speakers are literally the same talks, but improved or at least more fun than the Black Hat ones.
And it's very noob friendly too.
Yeah. And you'll meet a lot of friends. They're very welcoming for the most part. So I recommend, if you haven't gone before and you're thinking about doing it yourself, DEF CON is the one to do.
Yeah. And if you want to meet up with WatchGuard Threat Lab, we'll be there.
We'll be there. Although the second tip, if you go to DEF CON,
stay away from Corey. Oh, no, that wasn't it. Sorry.
If you're going to bring a computer, you better have some OPSEC capabilities. We have a booth at Black Hat, so a lot of our marketing folks are like, should I bring my computer? Black Hat is relatively safe. Shenanigans have happened at Black Hat, but they're not quite as regular. But if you're worried about those shenanigans, like at the front of this whole podcast this time, you heard about the Wall of Sheep. That is a DEF CON thing. The dangerous things that can happen if you are the noob that does not know how to secure yourself, that's going to happen at DEF CON.
Yes. And our tips for that are turn off all of your wireless devices.
Yeah.
Leave what you don't need at home. Pen and paper works pretty well.
If you're going to connect to anything, clear text is a bad idea.
And don't use the ATMs in a 1 mile radius around the conference.
I will say one thing that is fun to do is to bring a throwaway laptop with a wireless sniffer going on and just sniff. Sit on that network. Hope you don't get hijacked while you're on it, but sniff. You'll come home with a packet sniff with a lot of interesting data.
Yeah, just don't end up on the Wall of Sheep. Yeah. Well, hopefully we see you guys there. Thanks again for listening, everyone. As always, if you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe, rate, and review us. You can find me on Twitter at @XORRO_, and you can find Corey at @SecAdept. If you have any questions or any suggestions for future episode topics, please feel free to pitch them our way. And if you need your daily dose of security news and insights, check out secplicity.org. Thanks again for listening.